Good morning. It's Monday, August 12th. I'm Shamita Basu. This is Apple News Today. On today's show, the biggest moments from the Paris Olympics, which ended over the weekend, a massive hack of the Trump campaign, and Banksy strikes again with new art popping up on the streets of London. But first, new polling has Kamala Harris leading Trump by 4 points in three battleground states. Harris and her running mate, Minnesota Governor Tim Walz, have been rallying in crucial swing states and raising tons of money while they're at it. Meanwhile, Republican vice presidential nominee J.D. Vance made his case on three Sunday talk shows. On CBS, he contrasted his multiple media interviews with Harris's more scripted approach so far.
Unfortunately, Kamala Harris has run a campaign where every time she's in front of voters, a teleprompter is in between. She doesn't really talk to the media like at all. She hasn't answered, I think, a single tough question from a reporter.
With me now to help us catch up on where the candidates stand in this fast-changing race is my colleague Gideon Resnick. Hey, Gideon.
Hey, Shamita.
Okay, so now that there's been some time since Harris entered the race and enough high-quality polling and analysis has come out, what can we say about where this contest now stands?
Yeah, I think we can safely say that Harris has radically reshaped the trajectory for Democrats in just the 3 weeks since Biden dropped out. So first, as we talked about on the show at the end of last week, and as you mentioned, Harris and Walz barnstormed the country and drew thousands at a number of their stops in their first week as a combined ticket. In the most recent event they held in Las Vegas this weekend, the AP reported that they spoke to over 12,000 people, while another 4,000 remained outside because authorities had to stop admissions because it was 109 degrees out and people were still lining up to try to go. In response to that and sort of the images and videos we're seeing of large crowds, Trump has been falsely saying that some of these images of packed crowds at Harris's events are AI generated. There's no evidence for that claim at all. But the important takeaway here is that this kind of visibility and persistent campaigning with the energy of those crowds is really not something that Democrats were seeing as possible with a Biden-led ticket.
Okay, so let's talk about where they're campaigning. You mentioned that their most recent event was in Vegas. Before that, Harris and Walz were in Arizona. So it feels like the Harris campaign is looking beyond just those Midwestern states that we always hear about as a path to victory.
Yeah, I think that's 100% right. And I think that's the main point I would make here about how things have changed. So when Biden was the candidate, there was a sense that Democrats were not very competitive in polling in states that they had won in 2020, like Nevada, Georgia, and Arizona. Instead, they were starting to talk about a very narrow path to victory that was going through, you know, this so-called blue wall that we often hear about, Michigan, Wisconsin, and Pennsylvania. But now with Harris leading the ticket, that seems to have shifted. Democrats see a lot more options on their path to 270 electoral votes. In fact, the Cook Political Report in recent days changed their ratings for Nevada, Arizona, and Georgia from lean Republican to toss-up. Here's how Amy Walter of the Cook Political Report summed it up on PBS NewsHour.
4 or 5 point shifts in those battleground states, which is mirroring what we're seeing in the national poll as well. It hasn't turned those states, though, from ones that favored Trump to ones that now favor Harris. It just means now that the race is no longer as lopsided in Trump's favor as it was, say, in late July, as it is today, which is why we're calling this race a toss-up.
Also, Shamita, with all the money the Harris campaign is bringing in, it gives it some options to shore up their position in these states in the form of ads and staffing and more events in the future.
I do want to go back to the Midwest for a moment, because those states are still incredibly important. And just to remind listeners, in 2016, Trump won Michigan, Wisconsin, and Pennsylvania. And that was a big deal at the time. I mean, it had been decades since a Republican won those states. Then in 2020, Biden flipped them back. What do we know now about Harris's position in those states?
Yeah, these states are very, very critical, as you say. There was recent polling this weekend from the New York Times and Siena College that showed Harris had a 4-point lead on Trump in those states. That's Wisconsin, Michigan, and Pennsylvania. And maybe what's more interesting is to put it in context of their polling. So the Times previously had Trump leading by 1 to 2 points average when Biden was in the race. So they're measuring you know, a pretty significant shift there. And if you look at some of the crosstabs and what voters were saying otherwise in these polls, they told pollsters that Harris has the better temperament and is more honest and intelligent. But they also said that they still trust Trump more when it comes to the economy and immigration.
Gideon Resnick, thanks so much.
Yes, thank you.
The Paris Olympics came to an end over the weekend after weeks of competition involving 184 countries and more than 10,000 athletes. The United States came out on top in the medal count with 126 total. Among the American stars, Simone Biles, Suni Lee, and the rest of the U.S. women's gymnastics team, who secured the team gold. Swimming star Katie Ledecky won her ninth gold, making her the most decorated American woman in Olympic history. And here's an interesting fact from NBC. If American women were competing as their own nation, they would have won the third most medals after the U.S. and China.
Observing the Olympics in Paris was really a pretty unmatched experience.
That's Matthew Futterman, senior writer with The Athletic, who's been in Paris for the Games. He told us about some of his favorite moments, including watching American runner Gabby Thomas. She's beloved not just for her athleticism, but for her dedication outside of sports. She studied neurobiology at Harvard. She also volunteered at a health clinic for people without insurance. Futterman told us what a joy it was seeing her win one of her three gold medals.
And when she ran the 200 and crossed the finish line and was a gold medalist, she just sort of crumbled over and was just so overcome with emotion and had this just beaming smile across her face and a sense of amazement. When you've gotten to know somebody a little bit and you see them go through a moment like that, it really sort of stood out to me in a lot of moments that were pretty special in this Games. And so I'd have to say that that's a story that I'm going to enjoy telling to people for a while.
Other notable American moments, our women's soccer team returning to gold medal form, and both basketball teams defeating France for the golds. And across other nations, Futterman shouted out Dutch runner Sifan Hassan, who did something that you just don't see at the Olympics. She participated in the 5,000 meter, got bronze, then she did the 10,000 meter, bronze again, and then she also ran in the marathon and got gold. And on top of all that, she broke an Olympic record. That's almost 40 miles worth of racing.
And, you know, it's so rare that you see a marathon come down to a final sprint like that. And to see it happen just, you know, right in the heart of Paris in one of the most famous plazas on the earth with thousands and thousands of screaming fans in the bleachers above, it sort of encapsulated everything that I'd experienced for 2.5 weeks. This was just incredible sports in front of incredible fans in incredible settings.
Another standout moment for Futterman was in tennis, seeing Novak Djokovic winning the gold.
I've seen him win just about everything on lots of different continents, and yet he never won this gold medal, and he desperately, desperately wanted it. And he won it at 37 years old, 2 months removed from knee surgery, playing the best player in the world in Carlos Alcaraz. And he played just the most remarkable two sets in order to do that.
And there was also something special about watching the home nation, France, go so far in so many events. They ended up with the fourth highest medal count. French swimmer Léon Marchand was among the standout stars.
And there you are, and you're in a sports stadium with 20,000 people, and Léon Marchand wins a gold medal, and spontaneously, everybody breaks into La Marseillaise like they're in the bar in Casablanca in that great moment. And that happens over and over and over again. And it happened over and over again at these Olympics when France won a lot of medals.
One controversy lingers involving American gymnast Jordan Chiles. Originally, she placed fifth in the floor exercise, but her coach challenged the score. Judges agreed, giving her the bronze medal ahead of a Romanian gymnast. Romania protested, and over the weekend, officials ruled that the American coach's inquiry came 4 seconds after the 1-minute deadline to appeal. That meant Romania should have gotten the bronze. But now USA Gymnastics is protesting that ruling. It says it has video evidence that the U.S. coach submitted the inquiry in time. Up next is this year's Paralympics, which start later this month. And then, looking ahead to 2028, the Summer Olympics return to Los Angeles. Before we let you go, a few other stories being featured in the Apple News app. Hamas is signaling that it may not take part in new Gaza ceasefire talks on Thursday, saying any plans should match up with President Biden's vision from May. It's reportedly angry about new Israeli conditions. This is all in the wake of an Israeli airstrike on a school where displaced people were sheltering Saturday. Officials in Gaza said at least 90 people were killed. The attack has been criticized by the UN and EU. Israel says it was targeting militants who were operating at the school. In U.S. politics, Politico is reporting on a major hack of the Trump campaign. The news outlet started getting emails from an anonymous account sharing internal documents from the campaign. They included hundreds of pages of research about J.D. Vance with details of his vulnerabilities. Politico confirmed the files were authentic. The Trump campaign blames Iran. That tracks with an earlier Microsoft report that Iranian hackers were targeting a high-level campaign official, though it didn't specify which campaign. Politico asked the leaker how they got the documents. They replied, quote, "I suggest you don't be curious, because answering will compromise me and also legally restricts you from publishing them." And finally, the mysterious graffiti artist Banksy has added several new works to London streets recently, all with an animal theme. Like many previous Banksy appearances, many of the works have quickly been shared on social media, preserved, defaced, or outright stolen. Banksy has confirmed the works are real. The Guardian looks into how the lack of captions is fueling debate over what they all mean. This is a fraught political moment in Britain. Some argue it might be some kind of commentary on the recent anti-immigrant rioters, or maybe Gaza, or, as the artist's work has nodded to before, climate change. If nothing else, they are amusing to look at, like one where two hungry pelicans have been made to look like they're swiping a meal from a fish and chip shop. You can see for yourself on the Apple News app. And if you're already listening in the news app, we've got a narrated article coming up next from The Atlantic, also about art that's sparking wildly different interpretations. In this case, it's a 500-year-old manuscript full of strange symbols and illustrations that has baffled scholars for generations. But now, one expert has a new approach to solving the mystery. If you're listening in the podcasts app, follow Apple News Plus Narrated to find that story. And I'll be back with the news tomorrow.